This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoying, and my co-host for the Doctor in the House segment, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. How are you today, George?
I'm very good, Xiaoying. As you know, we have some good news in the news bulletin earlier on. We hear the hundreds of thousands of vaccinations that we have, that we're, you know, climbing out of this pandemic crisis all the time. And also some optimism, which I really would like to share with you, obviously, to the rest of the listeners out there as well, about restaurants opening and then also parks opening. I think some optimism is in the air.
Cautious optimism, I'd like to say. Obviously, those are for the fully vaccinated and you have to assess your risk. I'm always going to throw cold water on George's optimism.
Well, I'm not going to be dampened. My spirit's going to be there despite the tens of thousands of cases we have in the country.
Yeah, and speaking of optimism and looking ahead, that's what we want to discuss today, George. Our topic is looking at, you know, how technology and digital tech has a role to solve healthcare's problems. You know, I mean, especially during this pandemic, we've really seen healthcare finding itself at a crossroads, right? It's a global crisis, scarce resources that countries are facing. And of course, the immediate priority has been to ensure that people continue to get immediate access to healthcare. But, you know, we can't take our eyes off the longer term goal of better health and well-being for everyone and equity as well. So our guest today is a very, very interesting personality, I'm sure, and will have some out-of-the-box ideas for us, I think. Digital health futurist Manish Juneja, and we'll be asking him whether technology can solve some of the really big problems in healthcare. And as we understand it, he looks beyond healthcare for answers. So I hope he can answer why as well. And Manish is joining us all the way from London. How are you today, Manish?
I'm not bad. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
And well, as George said, there's some optimism. We're not out of the woods yet, but we're hanging in there. We're looking to the UK, you know, to hopefully, you know, learn the lessons from what UK has gone through as well. And our lines are open if you'd like to ask our guests any questions or share your thoughts about the role of digital tech in healthcare. 03773 2900 is the line to call. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, my first question for Manish has to be, and I'm sure you get this a lot, what exactly is a digital health futurist, Manish?
So that's a great question. In terms of my background, I've always worked with analysing data. So whether it's analysing the data of customer shopping in a supermarket in the UK, or most recently, I had a role in the pharmaceutical industry in research and development, where, again, I was analysing patient data, but, you know, up to 100 million patients and looking for information that will help drug development and drug safety. So both of those aspects of my career were where I was using data to drive decision-making, and I was looking very much at the future in those organizations. Now, when I left the security of my job in the pharmaceutical industry 9 years ago, I was really curious about what's happening in technology. And I went all around the world. I started in Silicon Valley in America, and I met all these tech people, these people building startups, the technologies of the future. And I started to get insights from all around the world into what different futures could look like. There's not just one future per se. There's a range of different futures that we could end up with depending upon what we build and what we adopt. And then when it comes to healthcare, then I started just sharing my opinions on social media. I grew my voice. And because I was independent, I was able to say whatever I thought without any restrictions. And that's when I also talked to a lot of people in healthcare, their frustrations, their challenges, put everything together. And effectively, as a digital health futurist, which I branded myself after spending time traveling around the world and focusing on healthcare, is that when it comes to healthcare in particular, it's designed for a different era. It's designed in the 20th century, the earlier part of the 20th century, when people had acute problems. They came into hospital, they were fixed, and they went home, end of story. Now we have all these chronic long-term diseases, people living with five or six different long-term conditions, And healthcare as we know it is not sustainable. However we want to spin it, it's not sustainable. We cannot just keep building more hospitals and hiring more doctors and more nurses. No country on the planet can do that. And when you look at the future, and if you look at the projections for the end of the century, we have about 8 billion people on the planet today, with a large proportion of those unable to access healthcare or hospitals or doctors in any way, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa. And yet, by the end of the century, we are talking about a forecast of another 3 billion people, so 11 billion people on the planet. How do we provide healthcare and enable good health for 11 billion people by the end of the century? So the entire model of healthcare needs to change, in my opinion.
Manish, quite impressive. I mean, when you talk about self-labeled healthcare futurists, that begs the question, how many healthcare futurists are there in the world?
Well, there's not that. Well, there's only one digital health futurist, which is me, but there are obviously a number of people, including people who were working as healthcare professionals, who decided to follow the same track as me, look at what's happening technology in other sectors and bring that back into healthcare and say, what does that mean for decision makers?
Okay. If I understand it correctly, essentially with your background of analyzing the big data, you're using that skill in order to predict what's going to happen or what are the routes to take in order to make healthcare more optimized. Effectively, like Mystic Meg kind of projecting what's going to happen to healthcare with the scientific and analytical tools. Is that correct?
Absolutely, Dr. Lee. And what I try to do is there's often, when it comes to the narrative of technology and society, we are either presented with, when we think about the future, either a dystopian future where we are tracked, we have no privacy, we are, the AI is ruling us and influencing our lives, or we have the utopia presented, which is the other extreme, where everything's going to be amazing and AI and big data and technology will solve all our problems in society and we'll be happy in 5 or 10 years' time. And I'm trying to say that actually there's a middle ground, and it's not necessarily going to be utopia or dystopia, but there's going to be a range of futures, plausible futures in the middle. And the question for the people I speak to in different countries, whether they're in government, whether they're in startups, whether they're members of the public, is, which of these futures is desirable to you in society? What works for you? What works for everybody, actually?
So, you know, I want to pose this question to George first and then get Manish to weigh in. George, from the perspective of a healthcare practitioner and after your years of working in different sectors as well, what do you think are the big problems that healthcare faces today?
Well, I mean, by far, probably the biggest problem healthcare faces is resources. And I really think there's a lot of wastage of resources along the way, because there's a lot of duplications of investigations, treatment, and a lot of that can be streamlined. And I really think the big data can help with that. The other potential problems that healthcare is facing is that treatment-seeking behavior. And I really think that in order to find out what are the ways people make decisions and make decisions sooner so that they can actually avoid long-term complications or avoid presenting late, especially when it comes to cancer. And I really think that, again, that the big data will help people to make decisions sooner and then also get their treatment instigated faster.
What do you think, Manish?
So, again, I agree with Dr. Lee here in terms of, yes, there are these immense challenges. In addition, there's the cost of providing care. So it's not only getting resources, as in doctors and nurses and building the hospitals, it's the cost of providing that care, which seems to be going up all the time. And then, like I said, dealing with multiple long-term conditions. These are very complex patients, some of them. You can't deal with them in 3 minutes or 4 minutes on the phone or in person. But going back to the data side, so what I see happening, and this is happening in other sectors, but not necessarily happening in healthcare yet, mainstream, how can we use as much data as possible to predict what's going to happen? So if somebody is healthy, they're 45 years old, How can we predict if their health status is going to change or worsen, or if they have a disease already, that it's going to get worse, and we can intervene early. So we use the power of technology to actually prevent people's health from getting worse. But this is, again, we're in these early stages, but this is where I would like to see healthcare head to, where we use the precious resources to predict what's going to happen.
So does that come with an additional cost? Because like you said, the big problem with healthcare is that everything costs more. Governments, for instance, can't sustain, institutions can't sustain. But will the inclusion of, you know, having to look at data and use tech add more cost to the system?
Absolutely, cost and complexity. Because if you think about the different parts of healthcare and how everything has to work together, if you think about where this expertise currently lies in predicting and big data and analytics, this is often in the hands of big tech companies, whether they're based out of China or the US. And we have to think, again, this is the social aspect of what's desirable. We could get to a point where we get all this information from all different aspects of our life, in addition to what's collected inside the hospital, put it together. But then what's the cost of people being tracked 24/7 about their health?
Manish, apart from cost of introducing this, the big data, I can foresee two problems as well. Number two, potentially, it's confidentiality. You know, people always feel very, very uneasy about the big data actually contributes towards the big answer. However, when their data is being misused, that's always the worry. And the second thing that people can get a bit worried when their life in the future or their health is taken control by AI. For example, you mentioned that you used to work for like companies that analyze supermarkets. I remember before leaving the UK, there were one case of somebody analyzing the buying patterns of a teenagers. In fact, Tesco can predict that young girl was pregnant before she even knew she was pregnant. And that really scares people. What do you think about that?
So that's, and I pose this question sometimes in my speeches as well around the world. I get different answers from people. So, for example, just like you've given the example in the supermarket, what if, for example, you're in the office in the future and you go to the vending machine to get a snack, and the vending machine, which is programmed by the office and it's linked to your medical record and your current health status, actually limits your choices, that you can't have that can of Coca-Cola, you can't have that candy bar because of your health status, and it limits your choices to coconut water and a granola bar. So what we're talking about here is that some people who are seeing this very objectively say, we need to intervene and have all people with these digital nudges where 24/7 technology is guiding them on the healthiest path. But actually, not only would that probably take the joy out of living, because all your choices are influenced by what the machine says is optimal, but actually it's about, it goes back to the confidentiality and trust. Who do we want limiting our choices when it comes to health? Do we want our employer? Do we want our car to tell us when to take a break? Do we want our smart home of the future, when we wake up and we go into the bathroom and we use the toilet? Do we really want a smart toilet analyzing our urine in real time and saying, hey, you have a urinary tract infection, I've booked an appointment and the Uber's coming to take you in 10 minutes to the doctor? Do we want that future where, in theory, it sounds, wow, that could be great.
And they roll up in front of George's clinic.
Right? So is that the future we want? Is that desirable for us?
All right. Well, that's interesting, because let's go for a quick break and come back and see where's the middle ground then. And what are the priorities right now, especially in the midst of a pandemic? Data is gold during a pandemic. What can healthcare systems implement right now? And then we look at the potential of the future. I'm speaking to my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist. And our guest today is Manish Juneja, digital health futurist. We're looking at, you know, the role of tech in solving healthcare's problems. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my co-host for the Doctor in the House series, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist. Today, we're speaking to Manish Juneja, digital health futurist, joining us all the way from London. We're discussing, you know, what is the role of tech? What is the potential of digital tech in solving healthcare's problems? And Manish, you already painted a very futuristic picture of what tech could potentially achieve. But, you know, how do we want to frame this future? And you painted what could potentially be a very dystopian future as well of us having our lives taken over by tech and having our decisions nudged or even driven by AI. So where's the middle ground then, Manish? Where do we want to focus our priorities on right now? Let's say taking everywhere around the world, we're sharing the same burden of the pandemic. So what can we focus on right now using tech to find solutions for problems of the pandemic?
Got it. So, for example, one of the fundamental problems that happens all around the world and is even more noticeable during the pandemic is the fact that a lot of our data as patients is not linked together within the healthcare system. So if we go from, if we've gone to one hospital yesterday and next week we go to another hospital, those different hospitals often can't talk to each other, their computer systems. Now, that's a very fundamental problem. It's not necessarily a technical problem. It comes back to, it's a policy or cultural problem where things have been designed in a way that don't allow these systems to talk to one another, which means that the doctors in those facilities can't provide us the best possible care. So we have to think about technology enabling as a tool, enabling healthcare providers to provide us the best possible care. And often they're frustrated because the current technology and the way everything's been set up is limiting their ability to be the best doctor or nurse they can be. So, and also going back to the point about this possibly scary future that AI in our lives and so this is why when it comes to developing new solutions, we need to involve people as partners. So I'm not just talking about involving people who work in healthcare, like a doctor or a nurse with the process of new technology and what's being developed, but involve patients and their families and their caregivers as well. So those people who are at the receiving end of these new technologies, they have their voice listened to say, hey, I don't feel comfortable with the data from my bed going into my medical record, for example.
So I want to get your view as a digital health futurist in terms of how we can overcome those, whether it's institutional or cultural barriers in terms of being able to just provide that fundamental infrastructure. For an example, in Malaysia, we've been talking about electronic medical records and sort of digitizing hospitals for decades now. What's your view on how we can leapfrog this?
So maybe one way to leapfrog this, and this is a novel idea that some startups have tried to work on and they failed, so we haven't necessarily got there yet, is that with this explosion in data outside of the healthcare system, like looking at my smartwatch or looking at my smart ring or the sensor underneath my mattress underneath my bed, what if in the future, if we are having trouble digitizing the healthcare system itself, why not drive it from a patient or consumer perspective that there's startups maybe that can build a solution that collects all the data from outside of the hospital about me, my health, puts it together, and then that can somehow be linked to my medical record. And so that is driven by the patient and consumer rather than actually by the healthcare system, which has been slow to react or not funded in the best possible way, or there's been policy problems. So this possible new future where this bulk of this data is coming from outside of the hospital, it's coming from patients themselves using all these different sensors and apps, and that's the way to drive the transformation of healthcare in terms of digitization in Malaysia.
I mean, Manish, I agree with you. that there are a lot of legal confidential restraints whenever the different healthcare institutions trying to talk to each other. You're right that the solution actually is when it's generated from the patient themselves, then that actually alleviates a lot of those restraints. And is that happening already in the UK and US, for example? It's all that data that you mentioned on the smartwatches and everything. It's actually a data belong to the individuals. However, they are willing to share with the big data, and that drives the whole movement.
Yeah, so I can give you my own example. So when I had COVID last year and I didn't know what was going on last April and we could only speak to our doctor over the phone, when I phoned my doctor and all she was able to do was hear my voice on the phone, she couldn't see me. And I said, look, I have all these sensors at home. Would you like data from my watch, from my bed, about my sleep, my respiratory rate? And she said, yes, please. So a lot of this data was from products that weren't medical devices. They were just wellness or fitness devices. And she found it really useful in using that information to rule out that it wasn't my symptoms weren't necessarily that serious that required me to visit a hospital. So it's really interesting how also from a cultural perspective that when people are now sharing their data with their doctors during the pandemic, it's because that's the best data the doctor can get in a remote virtual consultation.
I mean, Manish, you pointed out something that it's a communication between you and your doctor. It's on an individual basis. Do you think all that data of the people who were infected with COVID, for example, how you sleep, how you behave, what's your heart rate and everything like that, can effectively be fed into a system and that system can digest it and actually work out what exactly happened in real life when someone is suffering from COVID in the community? And that data, it's a lot more valuable than people, the data we collect in the hospital. What's your view on that?
So there have been researchers trying to answer this question with research studies. So there's very, very early research that has shown that data from certain wearables, people have worn during sleep, etc., that it can, again, this is preliminary research, but it's pointing where we could get to that, you know, 2 or 3 days before the symptoms begin, it can detect changes in the body and the presence of the COVID infection. And then so you could one day, and maybe it's going to come soon if this research is validated and built upon, that we have an early warning system for a COVID infection in years to come using an ordinary wearable or a number of wearables, and the algorithm has been built based upon data from around the world.
But arguably, Manish, we have huge disparities when it comes to access to digital tech now. You know, in Malaysia, we have a phone app that is what we use for check-ins. It's a centralized app. It stores our data related to COVID-19 management. But, you know, even in rolling that out, there have been concerns about certain communities who don't have access to the tech or who have low tech literacy. Now, you know, you are painting a picture that has so much promise, but how do we even address these disparity issues now?
Absolutely. That's a great point to make. So I was just thinking about the news headlines from different countries around the world where they've implemented a sort of digital by default policy when it comes to pandemic. So whether it's access to healthcare or even your ability to book an appointment for a vaccination, a COVID vaccination, and that was done by the app. So if you didn't have a smartphone, you didn't have a data plan, you weren't literate about these kind of things, for example, you weren't able to book a COVID vaccination in some of those countries. So that's really horrifying that this disparity exists. So going back to your actual question about, so I think we need to take maybe during the pandemic, we can, as decision makers, think about how do we, rather than focusing on, okay, we're going to focus in the city on building in this business district, we're going to have the fastest possible broadband, gigabit fiber broadband. How about taking a step back and saying, what about actually getting a national broadband infrastructure so that everyone has a certain minimum level of standard that will allow them to do a Zoom call, a telemedicine call with their doctor, upload their health data, for example, or even when it comes to education, what are we doing in the communities around the country to ensure that people feel able to get the help they need to improve their, not just their health literacy, but their digital literacy, again, up to this minimum standard that the government feels is necessary to ensure that nobody gets left behind.
Manish, apart from this disparity in access to tech, I really think the other issue actually is the worry about data being misused. Earlier on, you highlighted that potential of all that, you know, apps we sign up for, all the freebies we get for the wearables and all the data feed into the big data that will answer questions about how we should have access to healthcare immediately. However, that is a treasure trove that contains a lot of data, can be used for commercial purposes and manipulated for advantage that is beyond belief. And how do we protect that data? And what sort of like assurance do people get when you advise health authority to go forward?
So the fundamental point here is about trust and getting the trust of the public whose data is being submitted to these algorithms and these big data sets for the benefit of improving healthcare for research during the pandemic. So how do we build trust with people? It's about having a culture of transparency. And that means not about being 80% transparent or 90% transparent, but 100% transparent. So when it comes to downloading an app, being transparent in the sense of, if I'm downloading a health app provided by the authorities that's going to track my data and help during the pandemic, I don't need to read 60 pages of terms and conditions to understand how my data is being used, who's it being shared with. Put it in a few sentences that's easy to read for anybody, regardless of whether they have a degree or not from university, right? So there's things that can be, steps that can be taken, and it is again about fostering that culture. So a lot of what's needed in healthcare is a transformation of the culture, which is not going to be solved by one app or one sensor, and it's not going to be solved overnight. This is a decades-long initiative where you're talking about getting everybody in the organization, everybody in the country thinking the same way. For example, when it comes to transparency, yes, I agree, we all need to be transparent. Okay, well, let's move towards that. It will take time and it will take a concerted effort to build that transparency and to breed that trust with your consumers, with your patients, and even with your healthcare workers who say, well, I don't trust an American tech company coming in and scooping up all our medical records from Malaysia and profiting from it.
Absolutely. We'll have to let Manish go soon. But my last question for you, Manish, is, you know, in the futures that, you know, you work on or you work towards providing solutions for, do these futures see healthcare professionals being phased out, you know, that tech would replace the central role of somebody like George, who's aghast right now?
Well, look, I have actually given a talk about how emerging technology could make doctors unemployed in 2040, for example. But I would say being realistic, it's first of all, it's about remembering that technology is a tool. We have to use it to enable clinicians to do the best job they can. With regard to my personal view of everything I'm seeing, I believe that healthcare needs to become smaller. So we need fewer hospitals in the future. We need to move more. We need to use technology to move healthcare out of the hospital into the home, for example, so more things can be done at home. But also, it's also thinking about the fact that in certain situations, imagine somebody has a mental health problem, they feel embarrassed, or a sexual health problem, and they feel embarrassed about sharing it with a human healthcare professional, right? My doctor might laugh at me when I talk about my depression, as in I'm simulating a patient's story. So maybe in those scenarios, they might feel more comfortable sharing their symptoms and seeking care if there's an AI-powered chatbot, because they're already comfortable with WhatsApp and Instagram and chatbots. So suddenly you've got certain situations where they may prefer a patient, and especially these younger patients growing up with technology from the beginning, they may prefer dealing with a machine initially for their initial problems in certain situations rather than a human healthcare professional. And that's not to say they'll replace the human healthcare professionals, but it's about offering people different ways to access care depending upon what they need at that time.
Right. Let's wrap up. Unfortunately, I wish we had more time with you, Manish, because I'm sure George is, has got more to share. But maybe a final message from each of you before we wrap up. Manish?
I would just say put the patient at the center of healthcare and involve everyone in these decisions, not just people at the top of the organization.
George?
Manish, I think this AI-orientated or directed healthcare is inevitable in the next two decades. And I really think that it is all your right for the benefit of the patients, and the whole intention is to make sure that the actual cost is reduced and at the end of the day, precision and also safety is ensured. And the only thing that I can do is just, I guess, as doctors, to embrace it and also face out being a dinosaur by the time 2040, because by then I'll be 71. I guess I will just retiring back to sunny London or somewhere and end up not worry too much about AI taking over my job.
Well, if you want to hear more from Manish, he will be speaking at Magic eNation 2021's third thought leadership talk. And his speech or his talk will be titled Tech for Good. And that's happening on August 26th. Thank you so much to the both of you for joining me today. My co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. And of course, our guest, Manish Juneja, digital health futurist. And coming up, we will be hearing a short segment from a COVID-19 patient sharing his story of coming close to death and how it convinced him to get vaccinated. So stay tuned for that right here on Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.